Welcome to Empowering Motherless Daughters, where we help women to change, grow, and heal. My name is Zainab, and I am your host. Thank you for joining me. I have with me today an amazing lady that I love so much. I have sat in her class for like many, many times. I cannot miss her class. That's how I feel. Her name is Latiana Rigel. Latiana, please tell the audience who you are.
Yes, I am a public health nurse. I work with first-time moms. I provide them with support, resources, and education, and I stay with them until their child turns 2 years old. And then I also teach, as you know, a class called Reimagining the Child, and it's a child development class inspired by social justice issues. So we're looking at race, discrimination, and childhood trauma through the eyes and the lenses of children.
Awesome. If you can get an opportunity to be in that class, you should not miss it. I'm just saying. So Latiana, today we are going to be discussing trauma and the impact that it has on the brain. People kind of dismiss when people, you know, a child or an individual has experienced trauma. They're like, well, you know, it happened when you were 2. It happened when you were 5. What's the big deal about it? Well, guess what? Latiana is going to teach us how it affects the brain. What is trauma?
So trauma is the experience that goes beyond your ability to cope.
Okay.
So it's typically presented with stress. So there's different types of stress, but the stress that we're talking about here is toxic stress. And so typically that's when you don't have someone who's there to help you cope through that. And like we mentioned before, that there are different types of trauma. So you have acute trauma, where it happens maybe once, and then you usually can get past it with the support and help of someone. For example, like getting into a car accident. So I've been in a car accident before.
Me too.
And my mom was there and was like, okay, you need to get back into the car to keep
it's
driving.
Hard, isn't it?
It's
to difficult. Get back in the car, because
yeah.
I'm like,
she's like, I'm scared,
yes.
I'm shaking.
Yes.
But it's a good thing that she did that, because, and I know I'm probably jumping ahead, but neurons that fire together tend to wire together. Mm-hmm. And so if you coded in that experience that driving is scary, and you kept it and you didn't break it, then every time you got in that car, you would be terrified to drive. Mm-hmm. So my mom knew that, or in some ways knew that. And she's like, you need to get back in the car, and I need you to park this car so that you're not in the middle of the intersection anymore. And so I did that. I got over it. And then I'm like, okay, I can drive now.
So the support.
Yeah, so I had support. So it was an acute trauma and it didn't persist, right? Mm-hmm. And then you have traumas like repetitive trauma. So say you were going for surgery and you had to go to surgery multiple times. It can be considered a multiple mm-hmm. traumas that happen. But usually most people have some support mm-hmm. so that they're not continuously re-traumatized. But if you do have repetitive traumas and you don't have someone there to support you, then that can turn into something called PTSD, mm-hmm. which is post-traumatic stress disorder, right? You have flashbacks, you think it's going to continue to happen again, right? Because your brain is firing and wiring that this is an experience that is I'm priming to happen multiple times in your body.
It's like your body's in that fight or flight mode all the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just prepared and ready. And
you know,
so you're always on guard. And then we also talked about historical traumas.
Right.
Things that happen to a society or a nation, like war, slavery, that can impact the people in that generation for many years to come because of that trauma. Mm-hmm. And then I think the last one that I mentioned was intergenerational trauma.
Mm-hmm. That intergenerational, that is what I'm trying to break.
Yeah.
It's hard. It is so hard because your brain, your subconscious is wired to, it's like a default, your default self. To just do bad things, do wrong things, make the wrong decision, because it's like just passed on. And it's like without consent, mm-hmm. it just travels. So talk to us more about that.
So with intergenerational trauma, your parents have a lifetime of their own experiences, right? And they're coding in their brain about what's safe and what's unsafe in the world, and they're passing that on to you. So if they believe, if your mom were sexually assaulted or something that happened to her, and you stepped out the house with a short skirt on, or something that was revealing, she might code it in her head, oh, my child is unsafe, I don't want her to go through the same thing that I went through. You need to wear this long skirt or long
like what I'm wearing today,
jeans, cover up, right? And often it can be presented in ways where they condition you to having that fear of being a certain type of girl because they're afraid of maybe that was what was perceived of them when that happened, right? And so, yeah, it can pass on in that way. And there's multiple different ways that it can show up in your actual genes. There's a thing called epigenetics, where your genes are actually affected, where it turns on, it turns off, depending on the environment, the stressful environment that you're in. So, for example, if you have a family history of depression, and you grew up in a household that was high conflict, your genes might turn on for depression, and that could increase your risk of actually expressing depression. So it's not that your genes mutate and all of a sudden you didn't have this history of depression before, and then all of a sudden your genes are like, oh, I'm going to insert this depression gene. No, right. It's more so you might have had the gene for it, but it didn't become expressed until...
So the environment... Based on where you are. So let's say if you're in a, this is what I'm seeing with some of the kids I work with.
Mm-hmm.
So based on the environment, it will amplify whatever behavior.
Yeah.
You know, so like I was talking to a kid and she was like, my home is so toxic. She's like 13 or something. She's like, my home is so toxic. I hate it. Everybody fights everybody. And she's like 13. I'm like, everybody fights everybody. And she told me she has an 18-year-old brother. I'm like, what? You fuck your brother? Like, physically? Like, how?
Yeah. That's tough. Household chaos.
Exactly. So now with her having that experience, and then she's coming in, she wants to change her life. She wants to be different. But she doesn't know how to. Because guess what? She's going right back to that environment.
Right.
And with what she was telling me about her parents and blah, 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 which I can't really get into, but it sounds like this is passed on.
Yeah, it can be that in my class, I talk a lot about schemas. So it's like our mental shortcuts of grouping things together. Our brain has this really impressive way of being really efficient. So we tend to classify things by groups. So if I were to see furniture, I know that that's furniture because I've classified that, oh, it's something that you sit in, like a chair is furniture, a couch is furniture, whatever. But that can also be passed on into social constructs, right? So for example, if you're in a household that is chaotic, maybe you believe that this is what family looks like. This is what a home looks like. So then when you have a family and you have a home and you perpetuate the same thing, because you might believe that this is what it's supposed to look like and no one has shown me anything different.
So for me, in my case, what I'm trying to change is my mother did not have a good relationship with her mother initially for a long time till she was like 50 or so. But my grandmother also told me that she was not raised by her mother. She did not have a good relationship with her as well.
Yeah.
So you're talking about my grandmother, my mother, and then here I am. And trying to break that cycle. And I'm seen as the bad guy because for my mom and my grandma, what's the difference? What's wrong? This is normal.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand why you want this. This doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, how we are is just fine. But no, because my mom hurts.
Yeah.
She just doesn't want to say her behaviors, her actions, tells me that this is someone that's hurting, but doesn't want to do anything about it. And I'm like, I'm going to do something about it.
Yeah.
I cannot let this be the rest of my life of going from bad behaviors to bad relationships to bad whatever it may be. So let's talk about high risk behaviors for a minute.
Okay.
High risk or self-destructive behaviors. Now, a lot of people assume doing drugs or smoking or whatever mm-hmm. is a high risk behavior, but there are a lot of other things that are high risk behaviors.
Yes.
So let's get into that.
So I don't have specific high risk behaviors because I feel like any behavior could be high risk depending on how you use it. Right. And whether or not it's affecting your day-to-day living. So if you're smoking or doing drugs or drinking and whatnot, and you can still function and have a regular life and whatnot, then I wouldn't necessarily consider that a destructive or a high-risk behavior. But mm-hmm. if that behavior results in you stealing, you losing friends, you losing family, people think that you've changed, then I might say that might be a self-destructive behavior because now you're isolating your support system. And remember what I talked about stress and how toxic stress is an isolating factor. You don't have your support system around you. So if you're mm-hmm. isolating people, but you're using drugs as a substitute or alcohol or sex or
food
or not food, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, that's another one.
Not the gym. Yes, any sort of behavior that kind of isolates you from other people, then I would say that then at that point that it's becoming self-destructive. You are losing your support system. And that's what we're built and meant for. We need that. We need right. a village to get through.
So one of the things that I talked about with high-risk behavior is like knowing that this relationship, whether it's a friendship mm-hmm. or not, or a lover or whatever, knowing that this relationship is not healthy for you, but yet you continually engage or interact with that. To me, I consider that a high-risk behavior mm-hmm. because you know that this is not good for you. It's like when you shoot drugs. A lot of people think like, oh, well, you know, people that are doing drugs, you know, like they are bad. But if you are constantly in a toxic environment as an adult and you know it's bad for you, that is a high-risk behavior to me because you're subjecting yourself to a lot of issues that could affect your health. Because yeah. when you're in a toxic situation, it does affect your health, believe it or not. There's nothing that you can do about it. So what can people do to help with having trauma? Like, where can they go?
I would say the first step is self-awareness. Oof. So if they know that they have those patterns, if they know that, I would say, like, write down a list of the things that you want, things that would make you feel good. And if the things in your life are not matching up with that, it might be time that you re-examine something. So if it's your relationship and you're saying, I want someone who loves me unconditionally, I want someone who treats me with respect, someone who gives me reciprocity, I give them love, they give me love back, and you're noticing that within your relationship that it's conditional, that you have to look a certain way, you have to be a certain way, that you're giving all of this love but you're not really feeling it back, or that you're noticing that that maybe the individual is not faithful, like that's not respect, right?
Right.
So just being aware of where it's happening in your life can really help you figure out how to change it and breaking that relationship and those attachments with
it's
those
hard.
Individuals, right? It can be.
It's
really
very hard.
Because your brain is meant to.
It's like you're going against
like
yourself, you know? It's yeah. like, what are you doing? So I know the first thing I had to do was I had to do a column of where I am now and where I want to be. I'm not quite where I want to be, but I'm working really, really hard. And it feels like, oh man, I can't even explain. Like your brain, you almost feel like you're going through withdrawal. Hmm. Like when you are trying to change yourself from me now to me then, to me where I want to be. A lot of times when I make decisions, I literally have to be like, I have to like convince myself to be like, this is a good decision. Because my body, my mind is so... The norm for me is self-pity. The norm for me is negative talk. So when I try to tell myself something positive, my brain, I literally feel so off. And I have to take a moment and sit down and process it. And I have to write it down. I had to write it down before I can even do it. And I have to tell myself over and over and over again. And this is where the self-affirmation comes in. Now, of course, you know, I've had a lot of traumas in my life. Now, one thing we didn't talk about is the ACE.
Yes, we'll get to that, right?
Yeah. It's the ACE, which I will put a link below for you to do your ACE score. Okay?
And resilience score.
Oh, I got to do that. Yes. Resilience, I didn't know about that. Did you talk about that in class?
Didn't I? Yes.
Oh my gosh, how did I miss that? Maybe I wasn't
there. It was the class afterwards. I had one on ACEs and then one on resilience. And
it's because I was coming in late. Man, okay. I have to do my resilience score. Let's see what that is. Because my ACE score is a 7. And we're going to get into ACE right after this. We're going to take a break, okay?
And maybe like some
shame. That shame, secrecy, guilt. I had all of that. All of that. Honey, I was just keeping stuff in. Because when I decided to talk about it and I said something, they told me shut up and sit down. That didn't happen. Don't talk about that. That's not true. How you know? Okay, so right before the break, we're going to talk about ACE. So ACE is adverse childhood experiences. And that has a lot to do with trauma. And I did my ACE score, which you can do. The link is below. And my ACE score was a 7. Now, it says greater than 4. You are at a very high risk of a lot of diseases and issues. So I have that in my head right now and all the time. That is what helps me make good decisions because I'm like, oh my gosh, that ACE score. Like, no, you know. So let's talk about it. What is ACE and how does it affect the development, the developmental brain of a child?
Yes. Favorite topic. Okay. So ACEs, like you said, are adverse childhood experiences. But what was really interesting is that in 1985, Dr. Vincent Valletti, he stumbled upon it because he had this obesity clinic, right?
Yes.
And 50%, he had a 50% fail rate. So a lot of people were leaving his clinic and he thought, oh, these are the people that are leaving because they're gaining more weight. And then he looked into the data and said, no, actually, these are the people who are losing weight. What's happening? So he's doing his regular rounds, still kind of like figuring this stuff out. And he made a mistake. He asked a question to one of his patients and said, the question was originally supposed to be, how old were you when you were first sexually active? And instead he asked, how much did you weigh when you were first sexually active? And the client said, 40 pounds. And that triggered him into, wait, 40 pounds is a child. And his mistake was a lucky break in some ways because he was able to discover that adverse childhood experiences are really common. It started with sexual abuse, so then he expanded it to 10 questions to ask people and found that most of the United States has an ACE score. About 2/3 of us have ACE scores.
I know.
Yeah. And once you have one, it's an increased likelihood that you have two, because remember that complex trauma that I talked about. So if you have one, then it makes more sense that, not makes more sense, but it's easier to get another one because they often happen in tandem. So after this ACE study, they started to make some associations between, okay, these people who have higher ACEs tend to have higher health issues,
heart issues, drug risk,
risky behaviors that we talked before the break, and so it's been this constant thing that I think that has been in public health world, but not so much in everyone else's world. So this study was done in like the 1985-ish area, and there's still some people today that don't know what ACEs are.
I do, until you started talking about it.
So it's starting to slowly seep into public consciousness, but we still have a way to go. But I think that we can't divorce ACEs from the political context, and that so many people focus on the individual ACEs of like, oh, I have an ACE score of a 6, or I have an ACE score of a 7, you know, I'm doomed for blah, blah, blah. But I want to make a note that if we don't look at how ACEs are perpetuated by our policies, so poverty, right, is a way that ACEs can seep into your household because your family is more stressed and they might take it out on you, or your father might have gotten incarcerated for marijuana, right? That's an ACE score. But now we're selling marijuana, right?
So
there's a lot of policies that have contributed to our ACEs, and I can't like separate that right. fact. That at the individual level, it's important to know, but if we don't do anything at the political or the policy level, then we're still just going to have a continuation of generations of people who are experiencing trauma because we are not willing to at least address it at a level that can impact other people, large groups of people. And in terms of how it affects the brain, that's what you wanted to know. Just think about when you're stressed, is it easy to learn?
No.
No, right.
So it's very hard to learn. Everything is like my thoughts are running together. My vision becomes blurry. Oh, honey, I can't think straight. I can't see straight. When I'm stressed, I need to sit down. Now, if it's a good stress, then I'm like, I'm ready to perform.
Yeah.
But if it's a toxic stress, honey, I can't do a thing. I have to sit down. I can't even learn. Like yesterday, I was like exhausted yesterday. And I was like, I'm going to do this, 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 and this. By the time I got home, I was done. I couldn't even do anything. So, yeah.
Yeah. So if a grown adult is saying this, I can't learn, I can't focus, I can't do all these things. Imagine how children who are supposed to learn, or supposed to play, or supposed to have fun, are supposed to grow and develop in those ways. If we're talking about social and emotional development, they're supposed to, you know, develop friends and laugh and have those experiences. But if they're in households or in communities or in schools that are perpetuating trauma in some sort of way, they can't learn. They can't have great, like, you know, bonds and friends. Some might be able to,
but it's hard.
It can be hard. It's a
hard
barrier.
Because I didn't. As a matter of fact, I had a lot of memory issues. Like, there are parts of my childhood I literally don't remember. It's just, like, blocked out. I don't even know, like, what was happening, what was going on. When some of my friends, like, that I grew up with back home, when they would tell me some of the things that were going on, I literally have no memory. No memory whatsoever. And what I learned is that from trauma, your brain
compartmentalizes.
I can't even say the word right now. So your brain does that, and you're going, but you're really not present. You're like there physically, but your mind, because you see, your brain is in a survival mode. So your mind is really not there. And that's really what was happening to me because, you know, I went from, since my father left when I was like 7 when he left Africa, and he came to America. And so we're talking about from 7 till I came to America, which was like 14. I mean, I had repeated sexual molestation and all kinds of craziness. And I remember as a kid, I used to get so upset because the adults, so we would be, you know, in a compound with a whole bunch of kids. And I will be, this grown man will come and take me to his room. And I was like probably 9, 10. I can't even remember the age, really. And this is what the adult females would say. That child acts too grown. Ah! How? I'm like 9. I'm like 10. What am I going to go do in that man's room? Is it okay for me to be in that man's room? So I got to a point where I didn't trust females. I didn't trust women. Because I kind of like hated them. Yes, because I'm like, what in the world? So with that experience, that trauma, then the trauma from my mother with the constant rejection, and then when I lived in a home with my father, he he was trying his best. He really was. But his best, oh, honey, I would be like, 15 years old, 16 years old, if I do one thing wrong, He won't speak to me for weeks, and I'm in the home. So imagine being in the home with your parent, and you say hi to them, and they don't speak back to you. Not one day, not 2 days, not 3 days, because you didn't do something right. These are all the things. These are adverse childhood experiences, because I didn't even know what to do with all of these things that were happening. I don't know what happened to my brain. I just like literally, I stored it somewhere.
Yeah.
And then I became an adult and I had a kid. And then it all came flooding back. It just like, it came out of nowhere. I was like, oh my God.
This is painful.
Yeah, and it came back because I went in a protective mode. I was so protective. It was crazy. It was ridiculously crazy because I didn't want what happened to me. I couldn't even, just like what you were talking about, where it's like, you know, you say this happened to you and then you're like, oh no, I can't let this happen to my child. Or maybe because I was this way, maybe that's why it happened to me and blah, blah, blah. Like for me, I really don't know. I have no idea. But I just know these experiences, they were awakened when I had a kid. I started remembering everything, and it was at that time I had a hard time going to sleep. I couldn't sleep. So I hated going to sleep, and what I had to do was I would stay up for a long time, and when I feel like I'm about to fall asleep, I would like cringe my teeth, like just my jaw, like, oh my gosh, that was like, I would just... So I won't sleep. Like, I'll be like that for like an hour. And then, you know, when sleep comes, then you just sleep. But then the thing is, in my sleep, my molesters would be there. So I hated that. And all this time, adults will be judging me. They will be judging me for the fact that I didn't like to be touched like that. I didn't like to be in an environment. Like, I didn't... Like, I can be around people for a limited time. I can't be around you for, like, that long. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't want to be smothered. It made me uncomfortable. And I was, like, constantly being judged. Like, oh, she doesn't like people. But you don't know my life. You don't know my experiences. You don't know why. So I'm saying this to say, for my motherless daughters, like... You got to get to know you. Like, it's your responsibility. Just like how we were saying, right where you are now and where you want to be. So that you have an idea. That awareness is so important. Because at the time that I was dealing with all of these things and more, I didn't have that. I didn't know. I just knew that I hated going to sleep. I knew I didn't even like my body, like my own body, you know what I mean? I hated that. So this ACE thing is nothing to play with. For you moms, aunts, cousins, or whatever, please stop dismissing people's traumas. Because you don't care about your trauma. Or you're not aware of it, or you have pushed it so far away that you're not present, doesn't mean that it's not manifesting in a lot of ways. Some people, it manifests in working a lot because they don't want to stop and think. For others, they don't want to leave their house. For others, they are nasty. They are mean. They are cruel to other people.
Put up that wall.
Yes, that protective wall. And I told you guys before in season one, I had an anger issue. You guys know I'm an open book. I had an anger issue. The littlest thing would set me off. Very, very small. But the anger, not only would I show it, display the anger, but internally, my body was in so much turmoil because I was so angry at myself. So please, do not dismiss traumas. Don't ignore them. Don't act like they're not there. They're not present. If you don't deal with it, I promise you, it does not stay dormant. Mm-mm. It will resurface in ways that you cannot even control. You cannot even think what happened. What do you have to say?
I
just had to do that for my motherless daughters.
And if they wanted to learn a little bit more about it, I would suggest reading The Deepest Well by Dr. Nadine Birks.
Yes.
She's the
pediatrician.
She's the Surgeon General of California now. And she has a Center for Youth Wellness clinic, and that's where she does her ACEs work. And she had started to include it in her practice of understanding how it's affecting children's development. If you wanted to get to the nitty gritty of, well, how can I heal myself? What are the tools and therapies that are out there that can help me? There's a book called The Body Keeps the Score by Bessel van Kampen.
I think you told me that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it's an amazing book. And he talks about different modalities. He's, I believe, like a psychologist, and he works in a clinic as well, helping people to get past their traumas. And it's an amazing book.
Mm-hmm.
So I highly recommend, because there is help. These things aren't meant there to stay there forever.
Right.
That if you're curious and you want to explore that side of yourself that you've been keeping in the shadow,
mm-hmm.
And maybe like
that shame, secrecy, guilt. I had all of that, honey. I was just keeping stuff in, because when I decided to talk about it and I said something, they told me, shut up and sit down. That didn't happen. Don't talk about that. That's not true. How you know? But some other things that you can do too. What I did was cognitive therapy. I started off with that. And then I did the energy healing. That was
Reiki.
My next step. The Reiki. No, I didn't do Reiki.
Okay.
But I did the tap.
Okay.
It's called EFT.
Yeah.
You know, I do that. let's see. Of course, I read a lot, and I am like so active in my own healing, and it is very hard. I'm not even gonna lie to you, like, it is a lot of work.
You journal too?
I used to journal, but then my fingers got tired and hurt.
That's real.
Like, just what it is.
You're like, oh, carpal tunnel.
I was like, my fingers were tired. I was like, I need a break from writing.
Yeah.
So then I'll be in bed, and then I'll be like, I need to journal. And I'll just take out my phone, and then I'll just say a thing or two. So, yeah. But, I mean, I did that. So you can do video. You can do writing. Let's see. I read a lot. Like, I read a lot. I research a lot. Because designer that I used to be before was not in control. She was crazy. She was broken. She was hurting. She didn't know her worth. She tolerated so much. Even now, I still tolerate a little bit, but not as much. I'm learning how to accept the word selfish. To self-full. Something that I'm learning to be like, when someone says I'm selfish, I tell myself I'm self-full. I have to tell myself that. Because when I make a choice for myself to better myself and someone says it's selfish, no, I'm trying to fill my cup. It's my responsibility to fill my cup. No one else's. So these are some of the things that you could do. Is therapy. You can do, if you love to dance, you can do dancing. If you love to do plays, you can do that. It doesn't have to be my journey. Because guess what? I'm not there with you. It's your journey. And you get to create it. Like, you create the life that you want. How you want it. Now, you got to remember, it is hard. It is hard work. It's a full-time job. To change your life. Like full time, legit. As long as you know that, and you're patient, you're kind, you're loving and understanding to yourself, guess what? You got it. My question is this. What is your one word of encouragement to my motherless daughters?
One word of encouragement. Hope.
Why?
Really simple. I think that there's always hope that things can change. I think that there's always hope that you are the person that people deserve getting to know. I feel like that there's hope that people want to get to know the side of you that's the best version of you. Mm-hmm. And by you working through that process to get there, other people are going to come that deserve to share in that hope with you. Those who are there just because you're toxic or there because you feed off some sort of need that
negative
they have.
Energy.
Yeah. They'll start to go away when that hope
They
emerges.
Just fall off.
Yeah.
Like people just fall off. It's crazy. Yeah.
And you reemerge your new form with these new beautiful people surrounding you, cheering you on, hoping that you reach your highest potential as well. So I say hope.
Okay. And why should they listen to Empowering Motherless Daughters?
I feel they should listen to Empowering Motherless Daughters because it's a podcast that's meant to help people heal, right?
Yes.
And if you're looking for healing or searching, this is a great way to start, right? With someone who is also searching and healing with you. You're not a guru who's made it to the top and saying, like, oh, you should follow me in these ways. You're saying, I'm working through this with you. Mm-hmm. I'm your partner in this.
Yes.
And that's where they should continue to listen to you.
All right, guys. So we have talked about trauma today. If you are dealing with any kind of trauma, please know you are not alone. There is help. I have put down some numbers and links for you if you need to talk to someone. I don't want you to think like, oh my gosh, like I have to deal with this on my own. Even if you are in an environment that is not okay, that is not conducive to your health, like you have the power to remove yourself from that environment. And again, create the life that you feel you deserve. So don't just like ignore your issues. Don't ignore your traumas. Don't ignore a toxic environment or anything like that. Do something. You are that powerful. Do you know how powerful you are? Oh my gosh, do something about this. Until next time, I want you to be so good, so kind, so loving, and so patient with yourself in the process.